fishing all the time. Keep it going fishing too.
All right, it's time for Leaf and I to do a little talking about rivers, fishing, and what's going on for our fishing friends. I mean, I was going to say the fish themselves.
Our fish friends.
I'm super curious as I watch this river all, well, not all day, but I see it several times during the day. What is life for the fish like? We've got super low visibility, lots of stuff coming down. Are they hiding out? What's going on?
You know, I think we all have, I think many of us have our own water gauges, maybe a rock or a tree or something that you look at. I like to look at the old mill pump house here in Twisp. You know, you have those nice horizontal bars so you can kind of see like the height that it's really giving you. And I have like kind of each one of those bars is like, boy, if it gets higher than that bar, I haven't seen it touch that bar before. So, you know, the fish, for the most part, will just try to get out of the flow. They'll try to find clearer water, you know, and they'll just try to give themselves a break, mainly from that flow. They're not really going to be super concerned with eating during this, just kind of with getting by. But, you know, this is the type of year that can make it a bit difficult and lead to what we call a low recruitment year, just because we have our steelhead and our cutthroat. Our trout of that nature, trying to spawn at this time of the year. And they just, you know, you got a lot of flow. So that kind of pushes them into a different area, a piece of gravel that might've been, you know, just the right speed and depth. Yeah. This year might be a little bit too fast. So it pushes them around looking for a slightly different spot to spawn. When they do spawn, there is a possibility that the eggs could be smothered when the sediment load is so big.
Yeah.
But, you know, as well, we always have to bear in mind, just like our habitat is evolved to deal with this and thrive with this kind of thing, because this is a natural event, the fish will get through it. It might just lead to a different number on our recruitment. For the most part, though, you know, steelhead, cutthroat, they're spawning in our upper tributaries. Ones like Bridge Creek, South Creek, you know, these smaller creeks, which while they're raging, they're not quite as intense as the river that we're all seeing right now.
Okay, that's good to keep in mind. But it's interesting that their life cycle involves spawning during runoff.
Yeah. And you know, a lot of it, you know, you get survivor genes is what this is called. Fish that survived, did well, their lineage is done well because of certain things that they had done, not because of decisions they'd made, you know, they don't think, but it's just, this fish did that. It was there at the right time. So therefore its progeny did better.
Yep.
And with steelhead, I think a lot of that is that they are a patagious fish. They are able to, they're able to go through multiple spawning cycles. They have a very diverse life cycle.
So what is,
they can, they
what's
can
that
spawn
word again?
Multiple times.
Patagonous?
Patagious. So,
so in one season they can do?
No, that's one spawn sometimes per season. Although sometimes they could skip a year. Also, you know, bull trout, Atlantic salmon is where this term kelt came from. And patagious fish like Atlantic salmon, like browns, like a lot of these trout. Just basically everything except for Pacific salmon. They are a one-way trip, one-way ticket to the spawning grounds and die. But with the steelhead, they're going to spawn in the spring, and a lot of time I think it would behoove them to do that, because in the past they could just then be washed straight back out to the ocean, just kind of ruddering to get there with these high flows. Now, where my job comes into play with kelt reconditioning is now we have set forth an additional challenge for these fish. Not only do they have to swim up, kind of made that a little easier as far as the waterways go. We don't have that intense flow, but they have to get over ladders and they have to find their way and negotiate through dams. But when they're swimming back out, they're a lot of the time spawned down to about, you know, 0.5% of body fat. And so they cut directly into their muscle tissue to get energy to swim out now, because they're swimming out through still water. They're not being pushed out.
These are
all lakes. You know, you go down to
Brewster
Pateras.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're hitting them so hard at the hardest portion of their life by making them have to do that almost 900-mile marathon back over, eight, nine dams or whatever it is. And then they just get pounded. When they go over those dams, they can get the bends. They get nitrogen burns. Their eyes kind of get all popped out. Wow. Probably a lot like what would happen to us if we experienced major pressure in water. And then if they go out through the turbines, well, they might get through there in one piece. So
that's a possibility.
Right. And they also might be chopped up.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, we really have challenged these fish. Like I say, naturally, they would have just got a nice water slide ride back out to the ocean. They could have fed, probably made it right back the next year. But still, they might have skipped. That was another point I was trying to cover there.
Yeah.
Any of these fish can skip 1 year if they just don't have the energy back. Same with the Lahontans. I saw some fish over there while we were fishing that, you know, were obviously going to skip a year, some that were going to spawn that year. And it's just a really neat adaptation that, that these fish have.
Exactly. And we've run into that several different times when we see the stream bed change from you know, the amount of silt just sort of making it unspawnable this year. It's okay. There's some anomalies in there as far as their spawning cycles go, and they'll adjust.
And they, you know, I always love to say steelhead have that kind of built-in safety net. It's really cool that they could, you know, you could have either a resident or an anadromous form of steelhead, an ocean-going form of steelhead. You could have two resident red band trout spawn together. Non-anadromous and still produce anadromous young, a certain percentage of their young, you know, whatever, 50-50, 80-20, could be resident or anadromous.
Wow.
Because it's back there in their genes. You could have a resident spawn with an anadromous fish, and so the same thing can happen. And both fish could be anadromous, and they could produce resident young. So it's just a really, you know, if you think about how if some of those fish went out that year and had terrible ocean conditions and just didn't even make it back or came back in pathetic numbers, we have this resident-based group that's still always here that could still always throw off an ocean-going progeny.
Yeah, I still think that if you throw too many years in a row that require real difficult adapting, you're going to push the envelope further than it can be pushed. And I mean, that's what I worry about. But
nature is amazing. And but only, you know, has so much ability to come back from what we do to it. So we always kind of have to be conscious of how we're...
So, dude, is that your ichthyodork hat you're wearing today? We really got into
it today. Yeah, we kind of got deep into that one.
You know what? I love this part about it because we can do that because, I mean, you work in the industry. So it's pretty fun, I think. So anyway, how's fishing?
You know, fishing's great. We just kind of had a wrap on the Big O, Omak Lake. Went over there with some of my fly club friends on Monday, and also a friend of mine, Chris. He's kind of new to the game there, and he really enjoyed it. Just chasing down those fish is just so fun. We had a decent amount of fish come up in packs this year, but not quite as many as we're used to seeing. But the last few days was quite phenomenal. We were getting them on dry flies, big old mouths coming up and snapping down those dry flies. It was really cool. There are a lot of Lahontan fry, cutthroat fry there, and I could see them pushing around in the bushes, and I was kind of walking the beach, and I would spook them out into the water, and boy, that would trigger a feeding frenzy. Or you'd just look down the beach and see them getting devoured by a big fish, so you'd go throw right into that pot of madness, and it would come chasing out of there after your fly. So that
would
was super fun. I've always wanted to see the minnow cannibalism that I've heard such stories about up there.
But your fly got interest amongst a bunch of
I was throwing kind of a minnow pattern, so I was trying to pretend that I was one of those freaked out minnows, and I would just do a really fast like run and stop, like you're out of breath, run, and they would just chase it down, and it was really fun. It was a good day. It got hot, you know. We started at 7 in the morning knowing it was going to get hot, so we bailed out by about 1. It was nice, could get some gardening done afterwards.
Good.
Had to make sure my plants didn't keel over in that weather.
Oh man, it doesn't take long.
So yeah, like I say, it's probably a wrap for the Big O, but all those lowland lakes are starting to hit. They're all starting to clear up. The water's looking a lot better. It is heating up a little bit fast, so
yeah,
you know, I would get out there and hit some of these lakes that have that tendency to heat up pretty quickly, like Frost. Slow down on the road up there. Be cool to those people. You know, what are some of the other lower ones, like Leader, Alta, You know, just these lowland ones that are, you know, real cattaily and kind of mucky. Might want to get into them before that water gets too warm. I'm planning on going over to Leader soon, take advantage of that fun spiny ray fishery over there. I really love the crappie and bass scene there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a really prime time to get up to Black Pine Lake and Buck Lake. I just really like those at this time of the year. Or Mother's Day weekend always kind of marks the time to get up into Beaver Lake. And coming around here on June 1st, the crawdad season will open up there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I inherited a few crawdad traps.
Oh, yeah, buddy. That's good times with kids. They just love it up there. And what you know, we took, I think the best bait ever was a little, just a tiny little bass, and stuck it in there. My buddy Brandon brought it up and he had it filled with fish food from his aquarium or something. And we got like after size grading 250 really nice crawdads after throwing out smalls or egg bearing females. Just 250 really big ones. Had a fun crawdad boil on the picnic table out in the yard.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun.
It is. It's, I mean, prawns and shrimp are one of my favorite things to do in the salt water, and to be able to do it here is like a dream, because you just don't have any other options for those guys.
You know, another one, a few more that I would throw out there right now is Rock Lakes. They're a super amount of fun up Rock Creek on the other side of the loop there. Also, Black Lake, you can kind of start to get into the backcountry a little bit. That one's lower altitude, right on the valley floor back up there. It's up by Lake Creek. The Lake Creek Trail is how you get to that one. It's about a six-mile hike. I think it maybe gains 700 feet. So I really encourage people to pack in a float tube, because it's not too hard. Although it is 6 miles, it is a very stuffy trail though. On these hot days, always leave early or come back out of there late, because there's no air movement in there. And I've gotten a little overheated, but it's a deep lake. Take sinking line, take woolly buggers, just incredible fish in there. And you might even get lucky enough to see them out there on the dry fly. And Roger Lake, that was the other one I wanted to mention right now, because they're all kind of right there. You might not get over freeze out to get to the Tiffany's, but if you can get over that little pass right above Roger at freeze out, then you should be good to go all the way to Tiffany. I'll let people know when I get reports from there.
Nice.
So yeah, that's kind of it. You know, I wanted to not so much talk about fishing the river. We'll talk about what we're looking like maybe right before it opens there on Memorial Day.
Right.
But I just really wanted to talk about river awareness, river safety. You know, we're looking at a big, big push coming out of here in the next 48 to 72 hours. And that might mean, you know, just, I'm sure a lot of these people are conscious of it. If the house is near the river, just might as well think ahead. I know I definitely learned from that in the fires. I didn't get any of my stuff out of my house. You know, just even if you think there's a chance, secure your stuff. And this might not be the time to get out there and play. I've always, you know, learned from the rafting gurus around here that, you know, the magical number on this river is really kind of 10 to 15,000 CFS. That's when you have the main rocks and the main channel creating great waves in such places like, you know, the Burma Down, Black Canyon section. It might get a little funner up here at higher flows, but it really mainly just flattens out, speeds up, and widens out. And this year, man, we just have a ton of wood debris.
Yeah, so there's a lot coming down.
And, you know, it's one thing to get out there and think that you're the man and risk your own butt. But just remember, there's a whole group of folks here that would risk their butts to save yours. So just, you know, think of that before you're not just risking your own life when you go out there. You're risking the lives of those folks that would come and try to help you out. So just try to be safe. Let's keep our eye on that water.
You know, no, you're absolutely right. Just yesterday I was buying some irrigating parts, talking to a gal who basically lives, you know, just between Winthrop and Twisp. When she was a girl, this time of year, a couple of lady rafters died.
And
there's just a lot of, and the thing is, it changes. It can be different today than it was yesterday.
Absolutely.
There can be snags that got hung up that you maybe didn't scout out that are going to rip your raft apart.
You know, we're having anomalies, like you said, with the Chewuk, you know, biggest flow, even bigger than in 48, you know, when it took out all our bridges. So there's anomalous features to this flow. It's not just constant. You may have one section pushing just harder than it has, and you may think you got a good grasp on what the graph is telling you, but it just, you know, you only have to mess up once. What it gives, it can take away real fast, and I learned that myself. You know, I've lost friends in this river. I almost lost myself in this river, mm-hmm. bashing my face on the rocks in my kayak, and it happens very quickly.
Yeah, and one thing we know, regardless of what season it is, you don't mess around with Mother Nature.
Nope.
She always gets the last word.
That's right.
And it's good to be as smart as you can, and then try and make yourself maybe imagine being a little bit smarter even still.
That's right. It's all accidents I ever have. I think I'm right there, but mm-hmm. it happens when you get a little too close to the line. So.
No, that's a good word. We should always remember that. But right now in particular, it's just different out there.
Yep. Let's walk the line. Shake the stick, boss. Anyway, if anybody wants any fishing tips or would like to book a trip, just give me a call at 509-429-7298. You can check out the blog or podcast at Fly Fishers Pro Shop, and you can give me a shot on the old interwebs at methowfishingadventures@gmail.com. Be careful out there, care for one another, and get that fish right on, baby.
I said, bet you're going fishing all the time. Baby, going fishing too.